The Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, better known as HIPAA. It's a federal law that was passed in 1996. It includes a privacy section establishing national standards for patient confidentiality. But Michigan has its own laws on the books regarding a patient's right to privacy. And we wondered, how do our state laws interact with the federal legislation? Is one set of rules more stringent than the other? And how is HIPAA being misused or misunderstood by patients, families, and healthcare providers? Elizabeth Callahan Morris is a Troy-based attorney who's involved in areas of HIPAA. Very good to have you with us, Elizabeth.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Let's start with a refresher on exactly what HIPAA is and isn't.
You are correct that HIPAA is a federal law enacted back in 1996, and the rule that were promulgated under HIPAA have evolved over time. There is a privacy rule section that deals with uses and disclosures of health information. There is a security section which deals with the protection of electronic health information. And the most recent rule that was issued under HIPAA is the breach notification rule, where patients have the right to be notified when their health information has been compromised, like a lost laptop or hacking into a hospital
system. So it's keeping
up
with technology.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Yes.
And when it was passed, what was it meant to do? What problem was it meant to fix?
The problem that it was meant to fix was that there was not a federal law on patient privacy. All the states had some level of health information protection on the books, mostly dealing with medical records. And so this was enacted by Congress to set a federal floor and also to address the growing public concern about information becoming more electronic. Really, the government wanted to give some reassurance to the public that their health information would be protected as we moved from paper medical records to electronic medical records.
And done in a unified way and not a patchwork quilt.
Yes, correct.
Well, compared to other states, where do Michigan's laws stand? Do we have a system in place that's effective and fair?
Mm-hmm. We do. Michigan, like many other states, has laws on mental health records, on hospital medical records, on physician-patient confidentiality, special laws on HIV and other communicable diseases. So it is a bit of a patchwork of laws enacted at different points of time in our state's history. Where we struggle in Michigan is, when does HIPAA control and when does Michigan law control? And it's not always easy to know. The rule is, whichever law is most protective of the patient's information rules. And so when Michigan law is more protective, Michigan law will control. When HIPAA is more protective, HIPAA will control.
So it's almost like a trump card.
Exactly. The State Bar of Michigan has a HIPAA task force. And when HIPAA was first enacted and the rules were coming out around 2003, we created a HIPAA preemption matrix to give guidance to the legal and the medical industries which law controls. And we're actually revisiting that right now because we've had changes in HIPAA and we've had changes in state law.
Now, there was a recent story in the New York Times, and it was entitled, HIPAA's Use as Code of Silence Often Misinterprets the Law. There were some troubling anecdotes. I know one woman was phoning from out of state trying to let hospital emergency staff know about her memory-impaired mother's drug allergy. Staff would not even take the information, saying, no, you know, HIPAA. I'm wondering, have you witnessed similar incidences of HIPAA being misused or misunderstood in your practice?
Yes, we often get calls from our healthcare provider clients asking, are we allowed to disclose this information to this patient's friend or family? Are we allowed to receive this information from this caller? And so the healthcare professionals often struggle with that, mainly because the law, on the good side, it's flexible. But the downside is it doesn't give a lot of clear-cut black and white rules. We also have patients that would complain that too much information was provided to their friends or family. And then we have patients that complain that not enough was provided. So the healthcare professionals are in a difficult position because they want to be protective of their patients' information. They don't want to violate the law. But at the same time, they want to have really good communications with patients, friends, and family. So we've got that good exchange of information to facilitate patient care.
So I guess what's the most important thing that we, the public, need to know as we're interacting with the healthcare system about what can and can't happen under HIPAA?
The most important thing that the public should know, so if you have a loved one who is in the hospital, making sure that that loved one has, if they have the capacity, to communicate to their healthcare professionals who are the designated family members or friends who are involved in the care of that patient. So the primary burden is on the patient to make those wishes known to their healthcare professional if they're able to do so.
What if they're not?
If they're not, then the healthcare professionals need to use their best judgment.
Okay.
Because when the patient is capable of indicating, these are the key people in my life who are involved in my care, please communicate with them about how I'm doing, then that is the ideal situation. But we don't always have that situation. If you have a patient that is unconscious or otherwise incapacitated, then the professionals on the spot have to make a judgment call. If the person that accompanied the patient to the ER, how much information should I share with that person? Who is that person? And so they have to make the decision on the spot. Sometimes they get it right, and sometimes they get it wrong.
I would guess amongst families, it would be so worth it to have advanced discussions for aging parents. And also, I'm thinking of young adults still living at home. Like, we've got a 21-year-old daughter, and I found myself wondering if God forbid, something happens and she's unconscious in the emergency room and I show up, could I be denied information even though I say, but I'm her mother?
You could be denied. The rule allows providers to disclose information to involved family members, like the parent of an adult child who's in the hospital. So they are allowed to give you information. They're not required to.
So it's really just like this woman in the story in the New York Times. It's the luck of the draw who you're kind of presenting yourself to.
Yes. And the healthcare providers that have really the best experience with this have great training for their healthcare professionals. They have some clear guidelines on who we can talk to. So it's decided up front. If it's a parent of a child, then we are going to disclose information relating to that visit. If the patient doesn't have the capacity to say, yes, I want my parents to know, or no, I don't want my parents to know.
Is there something we could download from the internet, or a letter that could be? What could we do, or even ourselves, to have something to show?
There are three things I would recommend. The Office for Civil Rights is the federal agency that enforces HIPAA. They have produced two pieces of guidance, one for the public and one for providers. And it talks about communications with friends and family. When is it okay and when it is not okay? And they give some good examples. I encourage the public to review that document and keep a copy with them. The second thing I would recommend is putting in writing. These are the individuals who are involved in my care. It doesn't have to be a full-blown HIPAA authorization, which is rather formal. It can be something less than that. That, I think, is extremely helpful for when you do have capacity and you want your friends and family to be kept up to date, designate one or two people. The third thing is to plan for when you're potentially incapacitated.
Sure.
Designate a patient advocate and put it in writing. The state of Michigan does have forms online that can be completed that are extremely helpful. Similar concept is a durable power of attorney for healthcare. Those two papers are really only triggered for when you're incapacitated.
But that's when you're at your most desperate.
Very true. The other, on the provider side, what I've seen providers start doing, and I think it's been very successful, is when you check in for a surgery or for a procedure, and at registration, you will be asked, who should we be in contact with? They will give that person a spouse, a parent, a life partner, a four-digit code, for example. And then with that code, they can go and get information. And that's helpful on so many fronts because the patient knows my spouse or a significant other or parent will be kept up to date. The providers feel comfortable. They know quickly who is the right person to talk with. And then also, it's helpful to the healthcare professionals because they're not going to have a half a dozen people asking questions. That does take time away from patient care. We have seen complaints where family members feel like they were treated rudely by the nurses or the doctors. And in some instances, it's because the nurses had already given that information to three other people in the family and they had to get back to patients.
It's a balancing act. So protection that's there, but I really like your idea of going to the Federal Office for Civil Rights and downloading that guide. And also, again, where do we find the patient advocate form that we can fill out on the state?
On the state of Michigan website.
Good to know. Great talking with you. Elizabeth Callahan Morris is a Troy-based attorney who specializes in areas of HIPAA, privacy, and security. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Cindy.